kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. After a couple of big high-profile episodes, we're going to take it slow this time. We're just going to do a couple of reviews, catch up on our backlog a bit, just a more chill episode, and we're going to start things off. Pernell Vaughn, you're here. How are you doing?
I was doing great until you said the word backlog, which reminded me that I have a backlog that I can really stand to get to someday.
Man,
but video games, they won't have it.
You don't even know about fucking backlogs, man. This show has ruined any chance of me ever catching up on a backlog, ever.
Ever in your life.
The only way I catch up is with the sweet release of death.
Yeah, you don't want that, but somehow, who knows, maybe there may be some kind of weird afterlife gaming lounge where you can just kind of of course, you can't get any game there. It's only the games you bought when you were alive. It's not all the stuff you wanted, just the stuff you were able to acquire in life.
I'll die, go to gaming hell, and it'll just be like bad games in my backlog that I never wanted to play again. And they're like, no, you got to complete all of them.
That's all we've got. But at that point, if you're in hell, that'll be, if it takes your mind off of the fact that you're in hell, you'll probably love all those terrible titles.
Maybe. But let's hope that we're going to be talking about some good titles today, because we have a bunch of games to talk about. And you're going to start things off with the game Surviving Mars, developed by Haymamont Games. I always worry I say that wrong because it's a weird word, but published by Paradox Interactive. It released March 15th on Xbox One, PC, and PS4 for $39.99. A deluxe edition is available with a Metropolis building set, new housing styles, and an additional radio station for $49.99. Or a First Colony edition is available that includes the season pass for $74.99. Welcome home. The time has come to stake your claim on the Red Planet and build the first functioning human colonies on Mars. All you need are supplies, oxygen, decades of training, experience with sandstorms, and a can-do attitude to discover the purpose of those weird black cubes that appeared out of nowhere. With a bit of sprucing up, this place is going to be awesome. Pernell, did you survive Mars?
Speaking of hell, no. This would be blunt. No, I didn't, because I am freaking terrible at this game. But not in a bad way, but in a bad way, because I hate being bad at games.
Like how you said no, and then something shattered in the background.
That was basically society, my heart. Basically, my aura just kind of set the room ablaze and just knocked over a glass. That's all that was.
Well, I'm hoping it's just you being bad and the game's not bad, but tell us, what is Surviving Mars?
So Surviving Mars is a sim type game where the object of it is that you are being tasked with going to the Red Menace to colonize it and all that it entails. So you would think, actually it's hard to say, you might want to think that is a very straightforward and easy process because it's a video game. But then you also realize that you're going to freaking Mars to colonize it. So by virtue of that alone, it should not be a simple task.
No.
And the developers made sure to confirm that that would be the case. It is not simple, but it is a fun journey as you try. So there is a quick start option where the game will just kind of drop you onto the planet and give you an optimal landing zone and set you up with a rocket. But if you decide you want to play the actual, like the normal game and all that it entails to start, you actually initially begin by choosing a number of factors. They get you on decision-making from the very start. You have to choose a sponsor for the mission that you're going on, and that is essentially like which country or corporation is going to fund the trip. And this provides you with a number of things such as like funding, number of rockets they provide to you to ship things back and forth, and the quality of the rockets too, like how much weight can those rockets store. Then you got to worry about who you are, like what your commander profile is. And that's just more of like a buff of sorts. So, for example, you might get a guy who's a rocket pilot by trade. And if he's the commander, he gets an additional rocket when he goes up. You might get other guys that might actually come prepared with a specific type of research because they've studied it in the past. So there's a ton of different perks that can go into that. You can choose a logo, which does absolutely nothing. It's just fun. And then you can choose a mystery, which Honestly, I was too busy failing to pay attention to it, but what I gathered from it is that it's pretty much your purpose for going to Mars. So, you know, typically when a corporation funds your mission, they want you to go there for a particular reason, and the game gives you like a fair roster of what those will be. So once you land on the planet, or not even, you haven't landed yet. So once you pick all those things out, you then have to choose your rocket's loadout. So you get a specific amount of funding, and the rocket can store a certain amount of weight. So to choose what goes onto the rocket, you know, like a rare metals depot or an additional drone hubs, which I'll get to in a bit, or concrete hubs or residencies or all sorts of freaking things that you can use to kind of get yourself jump-started when you land on the planet. Then lastly, you have to choose where on the planet you will actually land. And depending on where you go, you'll be faced with a number of different things, such as access to water or different types of resources that you will need to build product. Or also disasters that could occur on the planet, such as like cold snaps or dust storms that will exist in the environment. So they give you a nice set of things you can use to customize the experience alone, let alone actually embarking on the actual experience. And to make it sort of easier on you, considering the fact that there's a lot of information to digest on this component alone, there is a little metric in the corner that lets you gauges how difficult you're setting the game up to be. And it ranges from zero, or I guess I think the lowest I've ever seen was 20%, but 20% up to like 200-300%, crazy numbers. So you can get like a stupid difficult run or pretty smooth run, which will also be difficult. So don't fool yourself. So once you choose where you want to land, you will drop your rocket down, and then it's party time. You have to already get going on what you need to do. So depending on where you land, you will be deciding on how you want to proceed to build out. You can scan, they design the map to be sort of like a grid, so it'll be like sector 3, like C3 or D4, kind of like how you would think of playing Battleship.
Yeah.
And you choose one of those sectors to start at, and then in order to branch out to further sectors, you have to scan them for content, so to speak. So what is available there? Is it inhabitable? Blah, 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 blah. And either you can do it immediately or you can use scanner drones to do it on the flight immediately, like instead of like over time. So if you do it over time, it's free. But when you use drones, it's done immediately, but you get a limited amount of them. So you don't want to overdo it because you don't have them just throw away. And now that you're down, here's where it becomes frustrating. So you have to get shit done. You need materials with which to build things that can get started. They start you out typically with Explorer, like three radio control vehicles, an Explorer, like a rover, and a transport. The rover is pretty much like a hub for different drones that can kind of be used to like command drones to build things in different within a radius of the actual drone, RC drone. The Explorer is used to go out into the distance and dig up like space crap and pretty much turn it into, convert it into minerals or metals or whatever is in need of at the time, if it's actually what it is.
I love and that last, you just call it space crap.
Oh, yeah, because it actually, you actually do have to deal with actual space crap. Like, this is the kind of stuff I'm talking about. So, once you, I'm going to finish the last thing, I'm going to dive right into this. So the last thing is the Explorer. And the Explorer's job is to seek out anomalies on the surface and investigate them to figure out what the hell's going on. And I believe they probably tie into the overall story, but all I noticed is that when you broke them down, the game will give you like a nice little detailed story element. It was like, hey, this is what you figured out when you explored the anomaly. And this is what it unlocked on Earth. And such and such and such. So, like, pretty much to prepare you for future aspects of the journey. Like, you might have a new guide you can actually transport to the surface of Mars later on. So, back to the space junk. So, now you've got some materials. Hopefully. Maybe. Probably fucking not. Now you have to actually throw down, like, different depots to construct. So, if you landed, for example, near a place that has concrete, you can lay down a concrete depot. And so long as you have a solar panel, a battery for the solar panel, and power cables to run between the systems, you can power this bad boy to dig up concrete. Digging up concrete, of course, generates space junk, actual space junk. And you have to build a dump to store the junk. So you're managing all of those things already. You got to manage the junk. You got to manage the production. You got to manage the drones that are actually transporting things back and forth. You got to keep them electrified and fueled. All this shit. And all this stuff can break. It happens to me way too freaking often. You'll just be working, all of a sudden you'll get a message saying, oh, your power cable shorted out. You gotta go send a drone to repair that too. It's a pain in the ass, but that's kind of part of the fun. It's all part of building yourself up. Yeah. So as you build up all these supplies, you find different find like space metals, you find concrete, you build it up, you become capable of building out more and more things. And just to go around the categories that the game offers for buildings, you have infrastructure buildings, which would be things like the concrete structure or the let me see here. So guys, you have it written down. So
look at you with notes all prepared.
I need them. This game is sick. So infrastructure would give you things like the drone hub that I mentioned earlier, which you can build to kind of build to get more drones and then command them in different areas of the map. And various like sensor towers so you can actually scan areas faster or to destroy things. Then you have power systems, which involves pretty much the stuff that drives me the craziest in this game, but also the most important. So you got solar panels, wind turbines, and another type of generator that's pretty much better to deal with dirt or dust storms. But the beautiful thing is that you have to worry about night and day. So if you build solar panels, they stop working at night, so they generate no power. So if you didn't build a battery, all your shit just shuts down at night. And that was fun the first time I experienced that. Even though the game told me, I was like, I'm sure they hold some sort of charge to the night. No, they know nothing.
No.
Pretty much. It really was on that level of rough-tastic. This game is brutal, man.
I was going to say, it sounds like there's lots of good in here, and the only negative I'm really hearing is just the difficulty in getting acclimated to the game.
Yes, and that's pretty much what was giving me the most trouble, too. Like, on the positive, there are more resources available to players than there were when I first started trying to play this game. There are a number of YouTubers who have crafted things to do to get started in some Surviving Mars, or five things they don't tell you when you start Surviving Mars. And hell, maybe the developers are going to watch one of those videos and go, maybe we can add a patch that'll just be more explanations on how to fucking survive this goddamn planet. But there's more resources available to players than there were for reviewers. And that's a good thing, because this game does have a difficulty ramp up, not just in the game as a whole, but also just getting acclimated to the user interface and all the different menus. Because I hadn't even gone into all the stuff like research and like determining what you want to build the research, do research development on, which will then allow you to buff your different abilities and your buildings or your drones, or heaven forbid, if you're actually one of the few people who has to get humans on Mars, you might want to have some research completed to make that easier too.
Nice. This really does sound like one of those games that you could spend an entire 2-hour podcast just discussing this.
You really could, because I'm still like, I have notes I haven't even gotten to yet, but there's a lot of meat to this potato. I will tell you that.
So it sounds like overall it is something worth checking out. So for $40, what is your verdict on this?
If you're a semi, it's worth your money. Honestly, I think, because you already know, I've reviewed a number of like these sim type titles for the show. And I feel like this one, even though it's still, you know, survive a planet, build on a planet, I think it runs differently than the ones I've done prior to this. It's his own unique experience. And it's a good one, too.
Nice. Do you think it's worth the extra $10 for the deluxe set with the building set, the housing styles, and the radio station? Or are people fine just going with the $40 one?
It depends. Like, I'm not sure. Are they actually going to give people access to that $10 stuff in another facet later?
I'd imagine you could just get like a $10 upgrade package if you wanted.
If that was the case, I'd say just stick with the 40, because it's going to take you a long ass time to get to the point where you're even building stuff for your humans. You might suffer before you even get there.
Sounds good. But next game to talk about is called The Council, developed by Big Bad Wolf, published by Focus Home Interactive. Episode 1 release March 13th on Xbox One, PC, and PS4 for $6.99. Following episodes will be $6.99 each. Or a season pass is available with episodes 2 through 5 for $24.99, or a complete edition of all 5 of them for $29.99 when that one comes out. The Council is a narrative episodic game with permanent long-lasting consequences. Plunge into a tale of intrigue and manipulation in the style of a classic murder mystery, living with a cast of alluring characters, each hiding their own dark secrets. Trust no one while uncovering dire truths, no matter the cost to mind and body. Our friend Dark Mika covered this one, sent in a review. Let's see what she has to say, shall we?
I suppose so.
Might as well, right? I mean, she went through the trouble. I might as well read it, right?
That is true. We have to be gentlemen on this. Let's hear what she said.
Indeed. Doc Mika says... Ahem. The Council is a third-person choose-your-own-adventure game. You play as Louis de Richet, who has come to a privately owned island looking for his mother. She was attending a small get-together of important figures set up by the island's owner, Lord Mortimer. That sounds like a bad name just starting off. Your mother has gone missing, so you've been invited to the party to help find her and take part in the festivities. The opening of the game is great. Your mother in the game is effectively Sherlock Holmes, and she's just fantastic. It's the late 1700s, so people's way of speaking is a bit different from what we're used to. Kind of like, this game we are reviewing, sir.
Hello.
Hello, darling. I'm a moron.
I never get tired of talking like that. I'm just going to point that out.
I'm stupid. Anyway, the description of this game might bring to mind the Telltale games, but it's not. It is really not the Telltale games. One of your first choices is whether your character will be a detective, a scientist, or an occultist. Interesting. This choice provides starting basic skills that Lewis has at his disposal. There's multiple ways to deal with any situation. There's also multiple ways to fuck up each situation in spectacular ways.
Now we're talking.
This is all remembered, which can change other characters' perception of you. They do this in a rather unique way. Each conversation has multiple ways to deal with it, some good, some bad. Many of the options are only able to be used if you have a skill pertaining to that conversation piece unlocked at that exact moment. On top of that, if you have skills unlocked, it might introduce conversation pieces that you would have otherwise missed altogether. Every conversation is one and done. You can't go back to a conversation later after you've unlocked a skill. This makes the game significantly harder. The voice acting and animation are both top-notch, though sometimes the voice acting work seems a bit off. It might full well be because people spoke differently in the past than they do now. This game keeps that reality in it. The story is really good so far, and the game mechanics are unique, infinitely better than the Telltale games, and I generally really like those. It's on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $7 an episode with 5 planned. Yeah, 100% worth it, in my opinion. You could spend that little and try it to see if it's up your alley. If you do, you could save a bit of cash by buying the season pass for an extra $25 for a total of $32 instead of $35, because math is a thing, if you bought each episode. Or, and this is what I personally suggest, just buy the complete fucking thing for $30, which saves you a bit more as well. I love the game, and I can't stress enough how much you should play this. It was fantastic, and I cannot wait for the next episode. That sounds really fucking good.
Yeah, honestly, she put quite a bit of love into that review. I can see that as being a grab in love, if, or so, perhaps.
Just to show how convincing that was, right now, I am going down the Council episode 1, loading up, buy. Wait for
oh, you are to pop up. Right now.
I'm buying it live on the show. I just bought episode 1, live on the show, which was like a day or two ago by the time you heard this, but it was live when it happened, baby.
I'm living proof that it was live.
Indeed. But one more game for you to talk about is called Damascus Gear Operation Osaka HD, developed by A-Plus Games, published by Arc System Works. It released March 7th on PS4 for $19.99. During World War IV, gears from all over the world went berserk and began massacring humanity. After over 50 years of war, humanity managed to defeat the Rages and reclaim Japan. Rages being the berserk gear mechs. Anyway, 30 years later in Osaka, gear pilots fight day in and God damn it. 30 years later in Osaka, gear pilots fight day and night in the arena for large sums of money. The hero, together with his operator, will participate, aiming for the prize money to repay his debt. It will not be a story for the history books, but a battle for freedom. Purnell, what is Damascus Gear Operation Osaka HD?
Well, basically, it's a dungeon crawler that's related to mechs. So it's a pretty straightforward game, believe it or not. It's essentially a title where you start out with, they have kind of weird, mysterious anime tropes with someone in the shadows saying, "You are the chosen one," some crap. But anyway, once you get out of that, what you actually realize is that you inherited a mech, an android, and a pretty cool mech garage apartment from your parents, but you also inherited an absurd amount of debt from those parents. So the game is pretty much you trying to pay back your parents' debt over the course of 30 days or possibly more, but they tell you 30 days as you play. And what goes into that is as you play, you are tasked with one of two ways to earn money, which is one, to go into the aforementioned dungeon crawl. You go underground and you go through a series of unlockable dungeon floors to pretty much defeat rival mechs and salvage parts. How does the game explain the random dungeon in this particular title? Kind of in a funny way. Apparently, the apartment building that you live in has a security system attributed to it that was designed to prevent rogue mechs from the previous world war from attacking the people that live in the building. But that security system is haywire. So they let people that live in the building run amok down there to salvage parts and to sell them for money. Because at this point, no one else is technically allowed to be in that area aside from people going under to salvage money.
Nice.
So it's such a weird thing. But when you're doing that, what ends up happening is you have to equip a series of different equipment items. Those equipment items being like arms. Let me see. The best way to describe it is like you have like different parts. So you have left gun, right gun. You have legs, body, back gun, and pretty much like shoulder pads. And all of those things attribute to different various stats. You have durability, which of course is your hit points. Laser defense and physical defense is defenses against, you know, melee concussion or melee things versus like laser attacks and beams. Speed for dashing around. Evade is a sort of like whiff stat because you can move in this game, but you're not capable of actually dodging every attack. It's not going to happen. If you do, you know, someone out there does, I'd like to meet that person and shake their hand, but I am not that guy. So the game actually has an evasion stat in the game as well. So if an enemy can't keep, he basically evasion gives you a chance of getting avoiding an attack even if it collides with you on the screen. Then there's laser attack power, physical attack power, and odds of you hitting a guy. So if your evasion is way over a hit, that's probably how you're going to dodge stuff. So you get equipment that's a tribute to all these different things, and some equipment comes in sets, which I believe gives you set bonuses if you can get enough of the same part together. I have never really bothered to equip everything, so I like making weird goofy mechs that have like tutus and whatever. And then in addition to that, different pieces of equipment also will have like trait perks, such as like defense ups or attack ups or things of that nature. And if you get the right types of gear, you can stack those perks, which is pretty freaking cool. So I do like that aspect of the game. But the one thing that was kind of bugging me about the dungeon crawl, though it's hard to say if I should fault the game for this or just say this is typical of dungeon crawlers, is the fact that the dungeons themselves are kind of bland. Like you pretty much go in, and the music, like the first floor makes you think, oh, wow, there's some pretty cool traits involved in each of the floors. And then after you get past that, all the floors are just pretty much here's a drab corridor or big room. When you walk in that room, various mechs will show up, usually walkers with gun construction just like yours has, and you have to pretty much blow them up and scrap to take all their parts for scrap, and that's how you determine what you can take back to the surface. Once you actually get through a series of floors, the last floor on your jaunt, or multiple if you decide to do a deep dive, will compose of a super security system. I can't remember the name the game gave it, but essentially it is a boss mech that you have to take down. Usually takes a lot more damage. And it's like very sturdy. I had to fight one at one point where my guns were doing all like 1 and 2 damage. And the only way I was able to hit him and knock down his 1,000-something was by using my laser. It was rough. But if you beat those guys, you get a wealth of salvage parts, which you can then take back to the surface. But you can't take everything because depending on your rank, they determine exactly how much you're allowed to keep. And everything else has to go to your overlords in the building, in the organization that you, actually allows you to go down there in the first place. So for starters, you're allowed to take up 15 parts, and everything else has to be donated to them. So that's one way to earn money towards going towards your debt. The other way is arena battles. So every once in a while, you'll be challenged by an individual who will pretty much ask you to go on a battle with him. And if you can win, you'll get a decent cut of cash. And other times, you'll be able to just decide whether you want to go to the arena instead of going on a mission, and you can get money that way too. But the ultimate goal of the game is essentially to get about a ridiculous amount of money. It's like $50 million or something dollars. And your goal is to raise your rank by doing these different things also to eventually be able to go into the super tournament, which is held on the final day of your debt. And that tournament pretty much has the amount that you need to pay as well. So it's like we can just get to this route, get into the tournament, and win and then make all the money we need to pay off our debt immediately. So where that's going to go, I'm pretty sure it's going to ultimately end up as some kind of weird save the world mechanic, because it's leading up to that and on the sidelines. But all they're talking about for the most part is, hey, you got to pay that debt bet. Well, let's be honest. In the real world, that's how it'll work anyway.
Well, believe it or not, there's actually a sequel to the game that just recently released on the Switch as well. And our friend, our friend Tim Ekibis covered that one on our last episode. He wasn't really too fond of the game too much. He had a lot of gripes with it. It sounds like you enjoyed it a bit more than him, although still weren't a fan of the dungeons in this one. For $20, what's your verdict on this?
I would say it's not a terrible game, but by that same token, there are a ton of dungeon crawlers out there, many of which are likely going to be a better fit for you than this. The exception being if you're really craving a mech game that's kind of in the style of classic Armored Core games, in which case this could get bumped up a little higher. But honestly, I have a hard time outright recommending the game for people to play, because it has a lot of, like, kind of, what's the best way to put it? Like, the presentation can use some work, and the dungeons are pretty much like, pretty much take out different colored mechs that are pretty much all kind of the same sort of rivalry, or sort of same level of, I don't know, danger quotient, I guess I would say. There's not a lot of variety in it.
Just one of those rough around the edges kind of games.
Agreed, agreed. And it's weird too, because, I mean, maybe it's just me, maybe Tim had this same thought too, but you ever notice how, like, you'll get, like, a lot of studios are doing more publishing work as opposed to developing work. So when you see, like, a certain studio, like, is their names on the box? Like, oh crap, Arc System Works. This has to be some awesome stuff going on here. But then you forget that they publish games too, not necessarily develop them. So you go in thinking, oh, this is an Arc game. This is going to be awesome. And then you realize, oh crap, this isn't what I was expecting at all.
Yeah, he actually had a similar concern that Arc System Works might be muddying their name a little bit by not having as good a quality control as they should for how people look at the company.
I agree with that there. I mean, I can honestly say at least that the game itself isn't like a turd. Like, I don't, if you're into this stuff enough that you would even, like, you would listen to this review and go, I still want to try. I want to customize a mech and go and blow shit up. Honestly, you'll probably still like the title, but my statement comes more from the sake of using your time efficiently as well as your money. And there's definitely better options out there for the dungeon crawler genre. Yeah. Just none of those really have mechs.
True. Oh, man. Well, it sounds like overall better dungeon crawlers out there. But if you like mechs, yay mechs.
Exactly. At least a try if you like mechs.
Cool. Well, Purnell, always good having you on chatting about these games. Do you have any final thoughts to sum up all of those titles?
They're hey, video games. I love how I was like, final thoughts, but he said to sum up these games. Like, I don't know.
Okay, then any final thoughts in general?
Pray for us. We're getting snow that nobody wants, and it's going to bury our homes.
Wait,
but
what?
If it doesn't, you ever heard about the snowstorm? Your area is probably getting bad, I think.
Fucking are you serious? Are we getting snow again?
We're talking, my area is talking about 10 inches of snow. My area. So imagine yours. It's not going to be pretty, but I'm hoping for the best. Cause my mind was like, you know, if I can just get through this season, I can go out and buy some boots so that I can actually shovel snow with warm feet, because I currently shovel in basketball sneakers, which have air poles and all kinds of stuff. So I do not retain heat very well on those things. And it sucks to shovel.
Nice. But I just checked. My area is looking at rain and maybe an inch. So it looks like you're fucked, but I'm not.
No, you're the one. You're the mountain man. You're supposed to be getting the bad stuff. I'm supposed to be getting the nice calming flakes. But nope, clearly Mother Nature had one more joke up her sleeve, and I am going to endure it. So sucks to be us.
All right, next game to talk about is called Tesla versus Lovecraft, developed and published by 10 Tons. It released March 16th on Xbox One and Switch for $14.99, March 13th on the PS4. Tesla versus Lovecraft is an intense top-down twin-stick arena shooter from the creators of Crimson Land and Neon Chrome. Plays the enigmatic inventor Nikola Tesla, harnessing the static energy to power up Tesla Mech and give the Lovecraftian nightmares a lesson in horror. Checking this one out. Welcome back to the show, Zach Lyons. How are you doing, man?
I am doing well.
It has been way too long since you've been on. How are you?
Not bad. I mean, it hasn't been terribly long. I reviewed a game sometime last year.
If I don't remember, it's been too long, and I can't remember last week.
Oh, fair enough. It was that moon game on the DS.
I don't even remember. But what is Tesla versus Lovecraft? Tell us about this one.
It's a twin stick shooter that I am currently playing as I'm talking to you.
Cool.
And it's a lot of fun.
Is this a dummy run?
Yeah, sure. Let's call it a dummy run. I might shout some expletives if I die, which I've been stuck on this level for a while, so I'll very, very likely die, like I just did right now.
You son of a bitch. So what do you do in Tesla versus Lovecraft?
Like it said in the description there, you play as Nikola Tesla, and the base is that the base of the story is that Tesla wants to continue his research and build all these exciting gadgets and gizmos. And Lovecraft is like, "No, it's too powerful. I have to stop you because you'll destroy everything." And Tesla's like, "No, fuck you." And I think probably the most underwhelming aspect part of it is the story, because like there's an opening intro cinematic cutscene, whatever, where they're having their little debate, and then you play the game straight away. So on one hand, there's no bullshit. You just kind of dive in, which is great. Yeah. But on the other hand, the next cutscene is literally at the final boss battle of the first set of stages. By which I mean there are three sets of stages, like three maps, let's say.
Okay.
And each map has about like 30 stages in it. Mm. And so after that opening cutscene, you play like 30 stages, including three bosses or sub-bosses, before you see or hear from Lovecraft again. Like, yeah, you're just so fighting.
It's a little light on the cutscenes and story elements.
Yeah. So that's a bit underwhelming. But, I mean, that's really backseat anyway. The meat and bones is...
The pew-pew.
Potatoes, I suppose, is, yeah, the shoot-shoot-bang-bang. Which excels. Like, it's a super fun twin-stick shooter.
Well, I would hope that a company like 10 Tons that has made games like Neon Chrome, Crimson Land, Judge...
Yeah.
All these twin-stick games... would make a solid twin stick game.
Yeah, you'd think they'd have the
they got that shit on lock.
Yeah. No, they definitely succeed. It's like I said, there's about 30 stages per map, and there's three maps, so there's lots of levels. I'm currently in the middle of the second map. The first map, the final battle, feels like an end game battle. Like if it ended there, I wouldn't have been surprised. So for there to be two more maps of equal size and increasing difficulty is really great, because there's so much more to do still, so many more abilities you can unlock. But on the first map, the focus is getting all of your weapons and special abilities and mastering them. So like basically after every single stage, oh, you've unlocked a new weapon, or you've unlocked a new ability that you can use. So you're getting them at a drip feed pace, but it's great because then you'll have a new stage to try each weapon with. Like every single weapon and ability you've unlocked up till that point can be randomly dropped throughout the level. And so you just pick them up. So sometimes maybe you'll get the first weapon drop, which sucks because they're so weak and crappy later on. But then again, you might get you start off with like a pistol and a shotgun, but then later in the game you'll have like a Gauss automatic rifle or a Tesla shotgun.
Nice.
And those are a lot more powerful, a lot more range.
So cool weapon variety in the game?
Yeah, super cool. It's mostly just pistol, shotgun, and assault rifle with upgrades onto them, but the upgrades are really fun and flashy and powerful. So,
plus, when you have a good base, why complicate things too much with like a ton of different weapons?
Yeah, like there's no rocket launchers or sniper rifles or anything, but then you wouldn't expect to have a sniper rifle in a twin stick shooter, I suppose.
True.
So
what are the perks in this game? I'm hearing a lot of people talk about perks. Some of the footage I've watched shows people getting perks. What are those?
Well, I'm actually upgrading some perks right now. There's reaper bullets. There's things like weapon damage plus 20%, 20% fire, weapon fire rate. Weapons shoot one extra projectile per shot, 30% maximum health, or plus.
And how do you get those? I'm guessing you just, as you kill things, you level up and just get perks every now and then?
Yeah, every stage you start at level zero, and then as you kill enemies, you gain levels. Like, I think the highest I've ever reached in one stage is level 10 or 11. So, you always reset. That doesn't mean you have less power. It just means you start fresh, clean slate every time.
Yeah.
And yeah, as you level up, you can choose one of two perks. They're just decided at random. Like right now, I've leveled up and I've got two perks in front of me, Radiator or Ricochet. Radiator is nearby monsters get radiation poisoning that causes them damage over time. Yes. Ricochet is your bullets bounce off the walls.
Nice.
It's
all sounding really, really awesome. The only downside you've told me about so far is it's kind of light on story. Any other downsides, or is this just a fucking home run?
I mean, I guess it depends on your skill level. Like, you could consider the difficulty a downside. Like, as soon as you hit the second map, the difficulty ramps up like crazy. Like, I think in the entirety of the first map, I died maybe half a dozen times out of 30 stages, and most of those were during the final boss or during a boss battle. So I didn't die very often.
Yeah.
I'm on the fourth stage or fifth stage of the second map right now, and I haven't beat it yet since coming on the call with you, and I've been playing for about 20 minutes.
It's just usually one stage. Shit.
One stage you can usually win or complete in 2 to 3 minutes. So I've already died more on this one stage than I have in the entire first map.
Well, I guess the only solution here is to get good, scrub.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the focus on the first map is getting all your weapons and abilities and becoming familiar with them, so you know kind of what strategies you want to use and which ones are your favorite and how to use them all effectively. But then the second map, it's a focus on crystal collecting, because there are also special abilities that you can upgrade that you have to have crystals to unlock. And throughout the first map, you might, like, there's a daily challenge that resets every day where if you kill X amount of enemies, then you'll get 10 crystals. But aside from that, you only get crystals for, like, specific instances in the game, so there's a very limited amount of them in the first map. But there are upgrades that cost, like, 100 crystals, or ones that have 7 times you can upgrade it, and the first time is only 10 crystals, second is 15, third is 25, fourth is 40. And so every time you just need so many more crystals, and you think on the first map, like, there's no way I'm ever going to get all these. But then the second map, crystals start spawning on the map as you're playing. But again, everything's so much more difficult. So it's like, well, do I want to try and get that crystal or do I want to stay alive? So it's definitely like now, even just playing this one level over and over and over, trying to win it, I've got like 35 crystals, whereas I probably got 30 crystals in total for the whole first map.
Jesus. Nice.
So you're just replaying a lot of the same levels with harder difficulty, stronger enemies and stuff. But there's a focus shift, which is nice because the three maps are the same maps, but you're taking different routes on them.
Yeah.
And so it shakes it up enough that your goals are a little different and your abilities are upgraded, so you've got more variety.
Cool. Well, overall, $15 on this one. What is your verdict?
Buy it. If you don't like twin stick shooters, then deny it. But I mean, that's really the only reason.
I mean, twin stick shooters, why are you listening to SML? We cover so many of them.
It's true.
Oh, man. Zach, good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts on Tesla versus Lovecraft to sum it up?
Not really. It's just, it's a fun game, and that's what games should be, right?
All right, next game to talk about is called Way of the Pacifist, developed and published by Household Games, released March 6th on Xbox One, PS4, and PC. $14.99. A mysterious figure known only as the Wanderer travels across the distant planet Zircon 5, a once prosperous mining colony that is now on the brink of destruction in the face of its dying star. With colonists disappearing and maniacs running wild, the Wanderer must stand firm, stay calm, and fight for answers in this unique modern brawler. Checking this one out and a couple of others. Chris Taylor, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Just played Undertale for the first time on my stream.
Ooh, how did that go?
Ah, it's so good. It's as good as everybody says.
I can't wait for it to hit the Switch, because I sure as fuck don't care enough about it to pick it up on PS4.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. I mean, I'll grab it on Switch, though. I'll go there.
Yeah, yeah. I need that Sea of Red on my gaming shelf.
Nice.
Which I've been trying to get a copy of Lost Sphere on Switch from Square Enix's website, because they've got them back in stock.
Ooh.
But it won't let me combine my PayPal credit with my PayPal balance. So And I don't want to just take it all out of my bank account because I'm poor.
Do you know someone else with PayPal?
I know. Yeah, you're saying I could PayPal them and have them buy it?
No, send them money from your credit and then have them send it back to you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, Ashley and I have done that a bunch of times. Anyway, we're talking about games. So
yeah.
Way of the Pacifist. What the hell is this game?
Well, Way of the Pacifist is all about transferring PayPal accounts from one person to another. Way of the Pacifist is a really cool, like, sort of Neo Geo style, like, giant, well animated, colorful sprite based side scrolling brawler. But this one has a twist.
Ooh.
Or a fist. So in this game, rather than your conventional, just punching all the bad guys as they show up on the screen, your task is to actually block their attacks and then counter, or actually block their attacks until they get tired and then literally thump them with two fingers. Just be like, boop. And then they fall over.
The boop of death.
The boop of death. And so it's a game all about sort of, rather than aggressively acting, you're passively reacting to the attacks.
So it's a passive fist, and this is the way you do it.
Yes. Actually, it reminds me rather of a brawler that I just recently beat with a friend on a Super Nintendo, Knights of the Round. I don't know if you remember that one.
Capcom,
yeah,
right?
Capcom, yeah, King Arthur brawler. A lot of the way you beat that game, even in the easiest mode, you really can't get through it unless you learn how to do this, is to, you know, block enemy attacks and then use your brief moments of invulnerability to, you know, hack and slash. So this takes that element, but it goes a little further. So not only are you blocking attacks, and as you block the attacks, it actually puts a counter on the screen. And once the counter gets high enough, then you actually can launch a, like, one-hit kill, like a punch with your robot arm or armored arm, whatever it is. It looks like a robot hand. And it's hidden under a cloak for most of the time. And I'll get back to that in a second. And then there's another thing. They introduce enemies that can grab you, which you can't block. So they give you another button where you can then sort of lean back and dodge out of the way and then come back at them with a counterattack. So you've got like a couple of different ways of avoiding the enemy's attack and a couple of different ways of assaulting him. But once the screen starts filling up and everybody's throwing punches at you, you gotta like really get that, that blocking defense timing down. And I found that it was really smooth and really, it felt dynamic and it just really felt really good. Like, I've said before, I think on my robot soldier, whatever, the thing I mostly look at in brawlers is, does it feel good? Does it feel like a brawler?
Yeah.
And I think this one passes that test handily.
Nice. I know I dabbled with it a bit on Xbox, so I could kind of chat with you about it. And I really, really enjoyed how different it is from every other brawler. This isn't just a button masher. I said
I think it plays
more like a rhythm game than anything else.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I found myself... I looked away from the computer screen for a moment and I realized while I wasn't looking at the screen that I could actually time my blocks based on the enemy's, the enemy kind of broadcast their attack with like a ha, you know, like a shout or something. And I could totally get into the rhythm of like listening to the shouts and then knowing when to block. So yeah, I think you're right there.
So do you have any kind of negatives for this game? Because I couldn't really think of it. The only thing I could really think that someone might not enjoy with this is if they just aren't patient enough.
Yeah, but, you know, F them.
Yeah.
there's 1,001 brawlers for them just on the Neo Geo alone.
True.
So this one's, yeah, this is the brawler for, this is the thinking man's brawler or
always
woman.
Good.
It's the thinking person's brawler. But yeah, no, there's a lot to recommend this one. I mean, I really enjoyed the graphics. The soundtrack is really good. It's kind of a, you know, it's a little bit, it harkens back to that Neo Geo, like really pounding style, but it actually uses closer to real instruments or at least higher quality synths and stuff. So it feels new, even though it looks a little old. I mean, there's not really a problem with this as long as you know that it's not something you can just go in and throw hands and expect to get to the end with. Oh, and you can gain levels. That always wins points with me.
Yeah, leveling up. It doesn't seem like there's a ton of leveling up in the game, but just enough to make you want to go back and replay and try getting, what is it, all A rankings?
I think so, yeah.
I know there's some kind of ranking in the game.
There's got to be an S.
Too many rankings and everything. But,
that's true.
The only question left, $15. What is your verdict?
Yeah, $15. Go check it out. If you're a Brawler fan, if you're a Neo Geo fan, if you just want something completely different, then go check it out.
Awesome.
Worth
sounds
the cash.
Good. Next game you're here to talk about is called Kite, developed and published by Labcat Games. This one came out March 7th on Steam for $9.99. White Tree gain control of secret weapons base Arch City and rescue the scientists trapped inside. Overcome rogue defense systems and discover the corruption source. Equip your human operated robot droid Horde with technology reclaimed from battle and build the ultimate soldier. Chris, what is Kite?
Okay, Kite is it's very much like it feels like a throwback to that heyday of, I'm sorry, my cat is like being super noisy.
Meow, 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 meow.
He sees meow. That I've stopped streaming, so he's decided to come up and start talking to me.
Give me attention.
Anyways, yes, so Kite, it's kind of a throwback to like that sort of 80s neo like cyberpunk sort of, you know, bad B movie futuristic thing where you play a very 80s looking robot lady type, maybe a cyborg or something. I actually couldn't really tell. And yeah, it's a top down thing. I think the best thing to sort of compare it to, honestly, is Zombies Ate My Neighbors. Because it has that top down view, and your goal is to defeat the enemies and gather up items to improve yourself while also saving the scientists. Now, I don't think the scientists actually are in any real danger. It's more that you just have to get to them and save them and have conversations about them. And this game is just utterly drenched in nerdy charm. From the soundtrack is incredible. I really, really like the soundtrack to this game. And it's just that really pounding, like bassy synth, like something you'd hear on the high end of the Commodore 64's run. And or maybe even like a really good DOS game. But yeah, apart from that, it runs like a twin stick shooter, basically. I mean, you do actually have to use the shoulder buttons to shoot your guns, and you've got a left trigger for your left gun, right trigger for your right gun, so you can kind of customize which gun is in which hand and what they do. And sometimes it's items that only just use energy, which, you know, comes back instantly. And the main weapon for that, of course, is a freaking lightsaber. So you can dual wield lightsabers in this game, and it's actually pretty good. They don't take out the turrets as well as like an actual exploding gun or a, you know, grenade launcher thing would, but it's really great for taking down enemies that are like running around. And but yeah, and so you run around and, you know, aim your laser sight, shoot all the bad guys, save all the good guys, and build your soldier between stages. So it's actually you know, it's pretty cut and dry in that sense.
Nice. I enjoy the name, too. I'm guessing that you're doing a lot of kiting in the game. For people who don't know, kiting is when you're fighting an enemy in a game and they're a lot stronger than you and can beat the shit out of you, but you have a ranged weapon. So you just run backward, just like pinging at them the entire time. So you'll just run backwards in circles for, I don't know, however long it takes to chip away the dude's health.
Yes. In this game, you have a shield and then you have your health. And so your shield restores itself pretty quickly. But I think your health takes a little bit longer and your shield has to be full. Mm. So there is a fair amount of like running and hiding involved if you're getting overwhelmed. But yeah, the turrets will fire out like, you know, almost like bullet hell style, like lots of bullets at once kind of thing.
Nice.
So it is there's a little bit of duck and cover involved in it, but largely the action is fairly straightforward, at least for the first few levels. It seems like it's a game that gets pretty crazy towards the end.
I would imagine so. So I'm hearing nothing but good so far. Is this a near perfect game or any gripes?
I don't really have any gripes. Like I said, I mean, the antiquatedness of it, like it's pretty classic. So it's like, if that turns people off, then they might not, be as like hot on it. And it actually, it had some graphic glitches for me at first, but I just blame my computer for that one.
Yeah. It's
I actually thought it was broken and I couldn't tell if it was the game or my computer. Cause it was like, it was glitching in a way that kind of looked cool. So I was like, maybe they did this on purpose. And then it cleared itself out after the first half of a level. So I was like, all right.
Who knows?
Ultimately, this game wins because it has a very clever hidden Monty Python reference.
Oh, do tell. And,
do you want me to tell, or should the listeners like go and try and find it themselves?
If they don't want to hear about it, they could skip forward 30 seconds. I want to know what it is.
All right. Spoilers start here. one of the posters that you actually see on the wall, it says Lem BDA, and it's a picture of Eric Idle. It's the poster from Lemming of the BDA from the TV show.
Oh my God.
Lemming, Lemming, Lemming of the BDA. Lemming, Lemming, Lemming of the BD, Lemming of the BD, BD, BDA.
And now this episode just got a copyright claim. So I guess $10. What's your verdict on it?
Yeah, $10. Go and get it. Come on. It's really cool. I think that, fans of classic, like, DOS and, you know, Commodore 64 shooter games with, you know, a little bit of modern flair and, like I said, really kicking soundtrack. I mean, what's not to love here?
Very true. And some good news for you. Soundtrack is available on Steam for $2.
Yes.
$2 dues. So if you pick that up, send me the MP3s because I want to hear it too.
Okay. And
then I could even possibly play it on the show. Yay.
Yay.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Enchanting Mahjong Match, developed by Orgestra. I hope I said that right. Published by D3 Publisher, came out March 15th on the Switch for $4.99. Enchanting Mahjong Match is one of the connecting game classics. The main goal of this game is to connect identical tiles with lines and remove them from the board. In Enchanting Mahjong Match, the line can change direction only twice, or less, of course. Enchanting Mahjong Match will be your perfect companion, whether it's hours or less than a few minutes. Chris, tell us about Enchanting Mahjong Match.
It's so enchanting. Enchanting Mahjong Match is a game about sharing MP3s with people. No, I'm just kidding. with your PayPal account. No. Yeah.
You're bringing it back.
I know. Just keep bringing it back. Stir the pot. So Enchanting Mahjong is, I assume, a take on the classic Mahjong. The thing is, when I was a kid and I played what I thought was Mahjong on the computer, it was actually an alternate called Taipei, which had everything like stacked in a pyramid and you had all this time to like match everything. Mm-hmm. This game is all about that timer. It is. So when you start the round, and it'll give you a preview of what the pattern is going to be, but the actual setting of the tiles is randomized. And so it's as it says, you basically find, you know, the two tiles that are alike. And of course, this being a high def game, it's pretty easy to like actually, you know, catch them like quickly. Like you don't really get that confused. Although they do use Chinese characters on those. And sometimes there's just like a little brush stroke that's like different between tiles. So you do kind of have to get used to the look of them for a little while before you can really get into it. And the game gives you about three levels to do that before it really starts like throwing out the challenge, because this game gets really challenging really fast, at least in the regular mode. So what I found was the best is actually utilizing the touchscreen on the Switch, and, you know, like tap the two. And like, not only is it finding matches really quickly, it's also it's all about knowing when you can match two things. So it's like we were talking about this earlier, actually. So you've got two tiles on opposite ends of like a square. with, you know, stuff between them, and you try to link them together, but they won't link because it would take more than three turns for one to meet the other. So you really have to pay attention to what can be done in two turns. And that gets confusing once the puzzle fields become really elaborate. You find out that, oh yeah, that's right, there's too much stuff in the way of this one.
Yeah, and once there's a timer in the mix as well, because I've done my fair share of Mahjong games through the years, and the whole Mahjong solitaire, mm-hmm. and the whole two turns thing, I've never bumped into in any other Mahjong game.
Huh, that's interesting.
I've never run into it, and just because I even messaged you, like, because I clicked through all the tutorial stuff. I'm like, yeah, I know how to fucking play Mahjong. Come on. And then I'm trying to match tiles. I'm like, why won't these tiles match? And I asked you, and you're like, did you fucking read anything? I'm like, no, I'm a moron because I just clicked through everything. And there's legitimate strategy to this version of Mahjong that just completely threw me off of my normal Mahjong groove. I can't just be like tap, 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 tap.
See, and I actually studied it up a bit, so it felt really natural to me. I actually had quite a good time with it. And also, the other thing to note is that there are different kinds of tiles that you can, that you sometimes have to explode. Sometimes it's numbers in sequences. You have to like get 1 and 2 and 3 and 4, which are, you know, their matches or elsewhere. They're like basically these huge barricades that are, you have to match two certain tiles. I think they're like the glowing treasure chests or something. You have to match those together to get rid of that whole barrier. And yeah, so they wind up throwing like all kinds of stuff at you. And like I said, the most of the challenge of this game is just the fact that the timer is unforgiving.
Oh God. Yeah.
And then there's one stage where I actually didn't realize that, you had to beat it in as few turns as possible. So every time you matched them, it made the timer go down by a big section. So it's like I kept doing it faster and faster, and every time I just died faster until I finally realized, oh yeah, this is actually, this doesn't have a conventional timer in it.
Yeah.
So be on the lookout for that. But yeah, and then the other element.
I still thought it was cool though. I enjoyed the fact that it was a different twist than what I'm used to with Mahjong. So it kind of kept me on my toes, and it kind of forced me to relearn how to play it. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. You reviewed it, and I still dropped $5 on the thing to play it because I love Mahjong games.
Yeah, it's definitely for Mahjong lovers and lovers of like artistic looking anime ladies, because I think that's where the enchanting part comes in, is that all the goal of all of this is that you want to get through the puzzles as quickly as possible to get those 3-star ratings, because every time you get a star rating, it removes a tile from a picture of a lovely lady that you can look at. So it's like that old school like sort of thing, which I know, you know, a lot of games ended up turning pornographic, but this isn't that. This is just
classy. Get your minds out of the gutter, people.
It's slightly fan servicey, but you know, it's whatever.
Yeah, but it's like it's PG-13 Nintendo appropriate tops.
Yeah, it's like it's Nintendo appropriate. So, you know, that's the goal, is to collect all the pictures of lovely ladies as you blast through this hard-ass Mahjong game.
Yeah, if you're able to actually beat the timer.
Yes.
But overall, $5 on this one. I'm gonna say it for you. It's worth buying because I paid $5 for it, and I'm happy with my purchase. But your thoughts? $5. What do you think?
Yeah, that's $5. It's Mahjong for $5, and it's really good. Oh, I know I said this about the other two games so far, but I quite enjoyed the soundtrack on this one. It's got such good music while you're sitting there doing puzzles. I was like really jamming along.
So you're 3 for 3 on soundtracks. Could we go 4 for 4?
Spoilers, yeah.
Okay.
Actually.
Well, your fourth and final game to talk about is called Bingo. Just Bingo. Developed by Sims, published by Star Sign, also out March 15th on the Switch for $4.99. Play Bingo for Nintendo Switch and get excited by everyone. That is legitimately the description on the store page, and I love it. Chris, tell me about this.
That could rival Psycheo, to be honest. So yes, Bingo. It's it's slightly belied by the title, because it is Bingo. There's classic Bingo in there for sure. There's also like three other modes of bingo, and they're all pretty interesting. So in your classic bingo, basically it shows you you can play either up to four players, human players, which you can use the Joy-Cons, full controllers, whatever. You only need a button and a directional pad to do this. Or you can play one player against three cheating computers. reason I say is because, okay, classic bingo, it shows all four boards on the screen, and it has some interesting elements here. So you're you're player one, whatever, and it cycles through the turns. It draws out numbers randomly, and like in regular bingo, everybody goes at once, of course. I'm just getting ahead of myself. So it'll say like 63, whatever. And so you look on your board and you have, well, you get to set it the timer before the round. You get to set the amount of rounds and the length of the timer before you start. But by default, it's 10 seconds. So you have 10 seconds to look across your board and be like, do I have 63 or whatever? And then if you do, you push, you know, the button on it and it flips it over. And of course, the first to get all the ones across any row gets a bingo. And then that round is over and that person gets the most points. But you get points for losing too. So you can actually still overtake everybody if you, you know, win enough rounds. So the other thing about it that's interesting on this one is that it actually contains a penalty for if you choose the wrong tile. So if your thumb slips and instead of 63, you push like 27, then not only did you not get that 63, it then turns black and now you can no longer match a row that goes across that tile.
Ooh.
Yes. And the reason I say the computer cheats is because it never, ever, ever makes that mistake. So it's one of those things that the human players will make. Now, that's not to say that the computer is invincible. I certainly beat it a couple of times. So it's just that it doesn't make the mistake of choosing the wrong tile, you know?
Yeah.
So then that's that mode. Oh, and the other thing is that, let's see. There's actually an ability to steal numbers from other players. It's a little convoluted, and I haven't quite figured it out yet, but that's just to make a note that there's another little twist on there, and I think it's across a couple of the different games of bingo. One of the interesting ones, this is the one I actually found the most intriguing, is that there's a mode of bingo where four of your tiles are already lit up, and it chooses a number, and you get to you basically get to use that number. Oh, this is the one where you steal tiles. I'm sorry. When it draws a number, you get to choose to use that number. But if you do choose to use that number, you actually have to black out one of your other tiles. So for every tile that you light up, you have to blacken another one so that you end up having to use like a chess-like strategy to kind of make sure you clear a path for like the lines that you want to commit to. So that makes it really interesting.
Yeah.
And then,
it's interesting how many unique variations are in this.
Yeah. And then there's another one where you don't actually draw any tiles at all. You just have enough tiles lit up to make a straight line, but they're like scattered on the board, and you actually choose to either push or pull the light on one row like in a direction, so you can move like the one like left or right and then try and make it line up with the other lit up tiles. But when you do that, it actually does it to everyone else's board. So you end up in this kind of tug of war trying to get your line to line up while also sabotaging them and keeping them from getting their lines gone up, you know?
That's really interesting.
Yeah. You put that with four players and that sounds like something that could ruin friendships on the level of Overcooked.
And you can't beat games that end friendships.
Oh, yeah. You literally can't. You'll never make it to the end.
So instead of reviewing this on the value of for $5, what do you think? How many friendships out of 10 will this ruin?
I would give it a solid 6.
6 friendships out of 10.
I think 6 friendships out of 10. I think 3 people will still want to talk to you after playing bingo with you.
And of course, and what about that 10th?
Oh, the 10th one is you. I thought. Oh,
well.
Oh, well, maybe. I don't know.
How many friendships out of 10?
Oh, okay. How many friendships out of 10? Well,
let's go back to how we normally. $5. What do you think of this one?
$5. I say definitely pick this one up if you have friends, unless you're just that into bingo, because honestly, the computer is, it's kind of your typical board game computer. It's kind of like, you know, you'll win, but you'll sort of feel like it's predetermined.
Mm.
This is definitely a game for humans.
And not cheating asshole computers.
Cheating asshole computers. but again, and this is 4 out of 4, I really love the song that plays while you're playing this game. It's really nice.
You really enjoyed the music this week, huh?
Yeah, all the games are really on it for music. I don't know.
Good stuff. Well, Chris, always good having you on Chatting Games. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap it up with all 4 games?
Everybody come watch me on my stream, because I'm doing it a lot more now, and I'm playing Undertale, and everybody loves Undertale. Hooray!
That had nothing to do with any of the games.
I know.
Our next game to talk about is called Flat Fat Cat, developed and published by Rainware. It released May of last year on Steam for $2.99, just recently came to iOS and Android as a free-to-play game with microtransactions. Crazy cat action awaits you. Flat Fat Cat is an amusing cat game that creates addiction and is super cute. Checking this one out because it's, you know, a mobile game. Jacob Garner, you're here. Yay?
Apparently.
Yay.
Yay about what? That I'm here or yay on the game?
I don't know. What is Flat
I'm definitely
Fat
not
Cat?
I'm definitely not yay that I'm here. I mean, that means I have to talk to you.
Yeah, true. Very true. But let's start off. Know. What is Flat Fat Cat?
Well, I mean, I got the Steam version of it from you to review. So
yeah, I should probably explain quick that we got an email about this and I inquired about an iOS code for you and he sent a Steam key. And then I replied back and mentioned, hey, I requested an iOS key and you sent Steam. And then he replied back apologizing and sent a new Steam key. So you're covering this on Steam. I did dabble with it on iOS myself. I thought it was a cute little time waster. Nothing that, you know, to write home about, but first, let's get this out of the way. What is the game?
Pretty much, it's just you aim your cat. Like, I mean, you can pull back. I assume on iOS you use your finger to pull back, because the Steam version also has the instructions for the iOS version on it. And so you pull back on the screen or with your mouse, your cat, and then you fire him towards other cats, and if you get 2 of them to hit, two of them that match to hit. So if like you get 2 white cats or 2 black cats, to hit, like they'll disappear, and then like it's kind of like a mix between like billiards and shuffleboard, I guess.
Interesting.
The concept's not terrible. I just thought the follow through, I wasn't impressed with it at all. First off, the Steam version crashes when you try to, because the game invites you to log in with your Facebook account, presumably so you can tell everybody, you know, hey, I just downloaded this game. You should try it too.
Yeah. A lot of mobile games are like, oh, keep track of where your friends are and see if you could beat them.
True. That or else like a login anywhere kind of functionality, maybe. Which, you know, right. Cause I'm assuming that the iOS version has this too.
Yes,
so maybe
it does.
So it probably saves game progression that way too. which, you know, that's a nice feature if that's actually what it does. We don't know.
And if it works.
Because the Steam version, when you click on the Facebook button, it immediately just crashes. And then, so you have to go into Task Manager, force quit the game, and then hop back in. So we don't know whether the Facebook version, whether the Facebook add-on actually works for it.
Went back and tried clicking on it again, and it just, like, crashed again. So Facebook on the Steam version is completely fucked. I don't know why. Apparently the game, you know, is over a year old or almost a year old on Steam. So I don't know why it ain't fucking working, but I'll admit I didn't try on iOS. Most of my time I spent playing on iOS. When you told me it crashed on Steam, I dropped the $3 and picked it up on Steam and ran into the same crashes. Gameplay wise, I thought it played similarly enough, you know, between the two. My gripe with the Steam version is it just plays like a mobile version. It has finger instructions. Yeah. It talks about lives, which I didn't see in the Steam version. Of course, lives are in the mobile version because it's a free to play. You got to buy lives, blah, blah, blah. Missed opportunity. You do not have 9 lives as a cat. The fuck?
Yeah, that makes sense. But it, like, for me, it was just like the graphics. Like, it reminds me of like late 2009, early 2010, like Newgrounds game, like a Newgrounds Flash game. The music is repetitive. I'd even put it as annoying, and it's just, you quickly the game adds in new stuff like chihuahuas that you can bounce off of. And like, if you hit the plant, like, you know, the plant breaks. I couldn't get the fish tank to break, so I'm not sure if that can break too. So, I mean, it's kind of nice that like they include little things like that, but it's just like,
the basics should like be there first.
Well, the basics, because also it doesn't, what I was going to say is that it's just like real quick, you feel like you've played one level, you've played them all.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you've cleared all the cats, it goes into this little thing where it's like, super cat. And then like the screen just explodes with all these cats, and like you're supposed to match them up, but then they don't disappear. And then like we were talking about it earlier, and you had mentioned like, oh, well, that's just you racking up points with, like, whatever.
Yeah, points and combos and all that. So you could get the 3 stars.
Right. Right. Like, but the game doesn't explain it. It doesn't explain what, like, that whole part. And so, like, I was completely clueless. You had to explain that to me. which I feel like should not have to be explained to a 33-year-old man. But,
no.
Well, you know, I just wasn't pleased with it.
Overall, $3 on Steam. What do you think of this one?
No, I'd put it at $1. $1, I'd be okay.
I agree. I'm never a fan of giving bad reviews, but Steam, absolutely avoid this game. On iOS or Android, I think it's a free to play game, so it's worth at least downloading and checking out. See if you enjoy the concept. I thought the mobile version was significantly better than the Steam. So if you're going to give it a shot, definitely try it on mobile.
Okay.
All right. Next game is called Mowi Lawn, released by PlayStack March 9th on iOS as a free-to-play game with in-game microtransactions. Welcome to Lawnmower Heaven, a Garden of Eden where lucky blade spinners are set free on fields of glorious bushy overgrowth. But beware of dog. Grassland is filled with four-legged hazards from canines to frogs to sheep. Jacob, what the hell's Mowi Lawn?
So it's a puzzle game where you have to... pretty much you can only move in right angles for whatever reason, but you tap the screen, the mower moves forward, and you have to mow like a certain amount so you get at least get like 1 star, and you'll pick up coins along the way, but you also have to dodge stuff, like as you said, there's birds, there's dogs, goats, all that kind of stuff in it. And if you want to get the 3 stars, you have to be able to dodge those things, but you have to get all the grass mowed, and I don't know whether the picking up the coins gets you to the 3 stars or if that's just a bonus for earning other mowers, but it sounds relatively simple. It does get challenging pretty quick, and it has a setup similar to other free-to-play games, kind of like... I'm trying to remember what I've reviewed. It was a lot like... it's not Panda Pop, but like, you know, those
the
different
big thing
like
is
pop
this
games.
Is supposed to be like a take on Crossy Road.
Crossy Road? I'm not familiar with it.
Well, that's another similar mobile game. Anyway,
okay.
You're awful at this. For being the mobile guy, the fact that you haven't played a really popular mobile game doesn't surprise me with how shitty of a person you are.
you know what? Maybe I'm just a mobile hipster.
Maybe.
It's popular, so I don't want to play it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I put a bit of time into Mowi Lawn as well. I gotta say, I got fairly addicted to it. It was pretty enjoyable. It did get tough quick. My biggest issue is with the whole isometric view is it's very easy to misjudge where you are.
Yeah, I'll give it that. And honestly, like before we were recording this, I was definitely harsher on this game, but it's just like the more we're talking about it, like it's definitely worth checking out. It's a very challenging puzzle game. And as you said, it does ramp it up really quick.
And it's free to play. So why wouldn't you try?
Right. Right. And as you earn coins, you can earn new lawnmowers to use.
Which was one of your concerns, wasn't it?
It is. Because some of them are kind of fun. Like one of them has like Mario colors, and I think it's like Mo-io. And then there's Batmo, and like it kind of looks like a Batmobile.
Catmobile.
It was pretty fast. I liked it. And that's actually one of the nice things about the different mowers you can earn, because they move at different speeds. So if one puzzle is challenging you, you can go into the store, you could buy a slower or faster mower, and you might be able to dodge the different obstacles a lot easier. My issue with it is, and the listeners probably don't know this, but I have a bit of a background in copyright and intellectual property law, even though I don't have the degree for it. Nerd. I'm a little concerned. What?
I said nerd.
Yeah, thank you. I'm a little concerned about one of the mowers in there. I forget what exactly it's called, but it is green and yellow, and the name is very much based on the John Deere mower. It pretty much looks like a spitting image of a John Deere mower. And my concern for this game maker is that the John Deere company is fairly litigious. And I'm just like, I don't know who your intellectual property lawyer was, but this was by far the most ill-advised mower you could have done. Like, without, like, unless you got their permission to have it in your game.
Or maybe it was just different enough that they got the okay on it. But,
I don't know if they would try to argue it as a parody or something like that, but I'm just like, I just saw that and I'm like, wow, that's a red flag. Not even for like gameplay or anything. It's just like, okay, you should be expecting a call from a lawyer.
Well, overall, as a free to play game, is Mowi Lawn worth downloading and checking out?
Yeah, definitely. The isometric view is a little bit of a pain. But it's definitely a challenge. Like, it's a good challenge. I'd recommend it.
Cool. Well, we got one more game to talk about, and that is called Assault Gunners HD Edition, developed by Shade Inc., published by Marvelous, released March 20th on PS4 and PC for $9.99. Extra DLC pack is out there for $4.99, or you could just get the whole complete set for $11.99. You are in control of DAT, a battle mech peacekeeping force. You must save Earth's migrants and the Mars colonies from the threat of the ants uprising. Who or what could be leading this threat against Mars and the new planned perfect utopia for humanity? Jacob, tell me about this one.
So it's a fairly simple game. If you remember like the Armored Core series that I don't know if they still make it. Like, I haven't seen an Armored Core game since I was in college, like, back in, like, 2007.
Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea. Like, Armored Core, Mobile Suit Gundam, Earth Defense Force. Like, if you've ever played those games, you've played Assault Gunners. It's a fairly straightforward game. You're playing, like, you're in this mech, and you can give commands to your teammates to move like certain areas, but pretty much all you do is just run around, jump, and shoot other mechs. And of course you have mission objectives, like you have to set up satellite dishes, or you have to like go somewhere and destroy this big mech. It's not exactly the most complex game, but for what it was, I thought it was a lot of fun. You had mentioned that it was a PSP or a PS Vita port
of the game? I think it was PSP originally.
Okay. Yeah. And so the graphics, I mean, they're really simple. I mean, it looks like it was made back in like 2008, 2009. thereabouts. So, like, you're not exactly getting the most heavy hitting game in terms of graphics. Gameplay was solid. I enjoyed it. It's fairly simple. It's easy to pick up.
Correction. It was a Vita game, but it was from like 2012. So it is still an older Vita game.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's a no frills thing. And so, I mean, like, if you're expecting like best of the best, you're not going to find it here, but it's a pretty satisfying game. And if you enjoy those, like, as I said, Earth Defense Force, Armored Core, those kind of games, this game's right up your alley.
Cool. So we have the $10 option that's just the game, or the extra DLC pack includes 15 more campaign missions, 3 Inferno mode maps, 15 extra weapons, 30 mech parts, 4 more fully acted, voice-acted navigators by renowned Japanese voice actors. If you were to get this, first off, is it worth picking up for either $10 or $12?
Yeah, definitely.
And then which set do you think is better? Is it worth going the extra $2 for the complete set?
Sure. I mean, like all those extra missions. I mean, if you're into those kind of games, I mean, those extra 20 missions for like what it was, $2 more?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Definitely splurge on it.
Or 5 if you have to buy them separate.
Which is weird, but you should just buy the whole thing all at once.
I'm looking. I'm not sure. Steam might not have the complete option. I know that they do have it on PlayStation. So when we're recording this, the game is not yet live on Steam. So it could very much just not be the option on Steam. Anyway,
and even then, I mean, just wait till a Steam summer sale or winter sale.
Yeah, it'll be like 73 cents.
Yeah, like, I mean, if you're really that concerned about having to pay an extra like $5, just wait for, you know, just wait for the Steam sale.
Makes sense.
Yeah, I'm definitely all for it.
Well, normally this is where we end the show, but I feel bad ending it on kind of a low note with some fairly underwhelming mobile games and Assault Gunners, which is decent for $10, but, you know, clearly not a must-own by most standards. Is there anything that you've played with in the past week or so that we can talk about to just end on a high note?
Well, I know you don't want me to review it until either next podcast or next week, but I've been using the Game Vice because it's my turn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been my turn to do it. And honestly, this thing is just like God's gift to gaming. I'm going to recommend this thing to everyone. And I was telling Jess, like, I used to play Dead Trigger 2, which is like a zombie first-person shooter game. I used to play it all the time back in like 2012, thereabouts on Facebook, because there was a Facebook version and there's an iOS version too.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to just play this thing all the time while I was waiting for the library to open up. And for some reason, I just stopped playing it on my phone. And so I started it, but I left it on there for whatever reason. I started playing it because it's one of the games that Game Vice is, like, it's immediately says that it's compatible for. And I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to quit reviewing for the podcast and just play Dead Trigger 2 for the rest of my life, because this thing is amazing.
Oh, like, no, Jacob, don't go. You'll be missed.
Yeah, I know. You'll just miss me so much. Although, although now you've got my ass like on the line for like the next like year, because after you've given this to me, I have to review every single iOS game ever.
Oh, you're goddamn right, but you do.
But yeah, like, I mean, I'm going to be giving a full review, you know, at a few, like a couple podcasts from now, or whenever you want to have me back on the show.
Probably in a week or so.
But
eventually,
yeah,
eventually. I don't like giving dates because everything changes.
Okay, well, definitely, like, this Game Vice thing, this thing is awesome. Definitely pick it up.
Cool. Well, Jacob, always good having you on. Thanks to everyone else who dropped by this episode to talk about some Vigi games. Felt nice having a kind of relaxing Just Reviews episode, because it's been fairly hectic on the show recently, and I think we're going to be ramping up again soon. So enjoy the calm, the eye of the storm, I guess, because it was a storm before, going to be a storm. I don't know. Analogy me bad with.
That was terrible. But then again, I mean, now that you're like an even older man, because I mean, did you discuss the fact that you had a birthday on the podcast?
No.
No, I didn't. Yeah, well, you old fucking man. You know, happy birthday and shit.
Thank
but of course, your memory
you.
Would be terrible.
Well, who are you?
Nobody important.
Cool. Do you have any final words to end the show?
like, honestly, like, I know that you saved this for a news portion. KB Toys is coming back.
What the fucking what?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. The announcement was made on LinkedIn this afternoon.
KB Toys planning sort of comeback. What the fuck?
There's some sort of holding group, and, like, they're on this, like, super fast-paced mission to have something up and running by Christmas.
What? I'm dead serious. The fuck?
I've already sent them my resume.
Oh man, we're going to talk about this on the next episode. So now give us some real final words to end this. Good enough.